Welcome back to Path to Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. In this episode, we're going to be doing a deep dive into Kanan's Reapers, and we're going to do that today with Benji. But before we get into introductions, I want to thank all of our patrons who help us keep the lights on. Thank you to everyone who supports us. If you're interested in supporting us monetarily, please check us out at patreon.com/pathtoglory. If that's not possible, we still appreciate the listens and the ratings. Of course, I'm your host, Iman Khusro, and I'm joined by a special guest from Tabletop Sydney, Benji. How's it going, man?
It's going great. How are you doing?
Good. How is it? I've always wanted to say this. How's it down under?
It's weird. We're like having floods and like the weather is over the place. And like I'm going out later today and I have no idea if it's like hot or raining or monsooning. It's a wild, wild west down here right now.
You know what it sounds like? It sounds like Texas.
Okay.
Texas. Yeah.
I've never been to Texas, actually.
I think you'd like it a lot. I think it's like very, at least it sounds like the weather is very similar. One day it's hot.
Oh, I don't like this weather. Like, I want like 26 degrees every day, like LA weather. That's what I would like. But
oh, really? Is that what it's like? 26? And forgive me, we are Fahrenheit people here. So
oh, okay. 29
Celsius.
I don't know what that is.
78.8. That's good. That's a good one.
Every time I go to LA though, and I used to go there a lot for work, it used to be the same temperature all year round. And I was like, this is perfect. Just wear like a hoodie. Totally good.
Yeah. And you mentioned it just now briefly, we were talking before the show started, that you're in broadcasting, right?
Yeah. I've been doing work in broadcasting since 2013, 14, around then. And currently working with an agency, but I'm based out of the Sydney Google office doing their shows and stuff for my main job. And then sort of, you know, I care more about my hobbies and stuff, which is, you know, why I do Tabletop Sydney as well as some film stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'd love to unpack like some of the, I mean, obviously you have the expertise, which is what led to Tabletop Sydney among your passion for gaming, but I kind of want to know more about you. Like who is, you know, because usually you're the man behind the camera, right? Very, very rarely will you come and just destroy Craig on TV.
I'm so sorry, Craig.
Craig is a patron. Shout out to him. He's one of my, he actually helped me practice a lot for some competitive events recently. So
he's a top bloke. He's a
wonderful guy. And you know, I'm a night owl, and I think the time zones work so brilliantly with you guys in Australia, because you know, every time it's like 2 a.m in the morning and no one else wants to play because like Europe is sleeping and everyone else here I guess is sleeping too, and Craig's like, yeah, I'm down. So
yeah,
shout out to Craig.
That man grinds so many games. It's kind of scaring me because one day he's going to rock up to an event Super Saiyan and just like kick my ass.
I'm waiting for the day that he decides to play something meta.
Oh, he never will. He never will. No. He's too much of a hipster.
Yeah. Well, if one day he'll play something meta, and then we'll all be terrified. So, but enough about Craig. This is about Benji today. So, before we get into Reapers and you know, we've done a lot of, we've seen a lot of your success with them. I want to know, again, the man behind the camera, right? So when did you start tabletop gaming in general?
Oh, wow. Tabletop gaming, I played back like decades ago. I used to play Warhammer 40K in 5th edition. That was sort of like my first like proper tabletop game. I played it for a while, and then I sort of took a break from that and focused on video games for a while, because that kind of became like both in broadcasting but also in video games. So I did a lot of esports. So I did that for a while. But I always had like board games and Warhammer figures in the house. I played board games since I was like 20. So like I still have that sort of connection to playing on the tabletop, even though it's not Warhammer. But then sort of a few years ago, I was working and Kent came in. Kent's actually the guy who got me back into it from the channel, obviously. And he was doing some video work with us and we were just chatting, and he was like, oh yeah, I play, you know, all these games. And I was like, man, I used to play that. And I stopped, but I'm like, why did I stop? I loved it. And then I'm like, oh, I stopped because I didn't really have anyone to play with. He's like, oh, come and play Underworlds. This was Beastgrave, end of Beastgrave. And I'm like, yeah, I'll give it a crack. Why not? So I went out and bought Thundrix. That was my first warband. And I was like, these guys look cool and look fun to paint. And I was like, yeah, let's get into it. And went along to we had a weekly meetup at that point, which went on for a long time. And I had a blast. The people there were awesome. And I literally just went every week from then.
That's awesome. I love that. And you start with 40K, like probably most people, right?
Yeah.
What was your first army?
I have I restarted 40K. I'm actually still playing 40K now.
Really?
My first time was Space Marines, and then I went to Dark Angels. And so when I restarted a couple of years ago, I got Dark Angels again. I'm just a Dark Angel player. And also play Age of Sigmar. I'm an Ossiak Bone Reaper player there. So I've got like a bunch of armies in cases, and I just, whatever event's on, I grab the case and go.
Just walk out and play. I love that. I just have to make this comment on Dark Angels. You know, you guys are the brunt of many memes and jokes on the internet. How do you feel about that?
Doesn't matter. I still win the game. Like, they can make all the jokes they want, but in the end, like, I get the big W on the scorecard. So
there you go. I love that. I love that. And that, assuming that competitive nature, it translates really well to Underworlds. So you joined End of Beastgrave. I love Profiteers. Probably the most meaningful warband to me in terms of just my experience with them and Night Vault. And so you joined tail end of Beastgrave. And so you start playing with this local community, right? And Kent, Craig, Jacko. Am I missing any?
Kyle. At the start, he was one of the big figures, yeah.
And then there's a guy on the podcast, he loves playing with Death Warbands.
Kiva.
He was in your most... Kiva, yes. Yeah. I love his dedication to that Grand Alliance. And how did you start Tabletop Sydney? Like, was it just organic? Like, were you looking for content, couldn't find it? Or what was that like?
We had our meetup basically was like 6 p.m., 5:36 we meet, and then by 8:30 the store closed. So we had like 2 hours, 3 hours to play. It wasn't that long. So we all went and got dinner together, and we're just sitting around and we're talking about Underworlds, and we're talking about content creators, and there were content creators. There was lots of battle reports up, but they just weren't high quality. Like, no offense to people that were doing it. They're putting their heart into it, but like, from a broadcasting background, I want like crisp cameras, camera cuts, graphics, all that stuff, high quality microphones, lapels. And what we were seeing was people like with webcams and like desk mics and stuff. And to me, it's like, I look at that and I'm like, that's sure, I'll watch it, but it wasn't exciting to watch. Whereas if you look like one of the big influences for me was Tabletop Titans from Warhammer 40K. If anyone's watched their channel, those guys, I watch the high quality stuff. They do actually live broadcasted rather than pre-recorded. So they're mm-hmm. way ahead of us, and they're doing 40K, which is much harder. But I was looking at that going, man, like, they can do that. I the skills I have, I can do that quality broadcast.
Yeah.
Why don't I bring it into Underworlds and do it? And then everyone in the group was like, yeah, I'll play that. If you do all the hard work, we'll come along and play. And I'm like, wow, that sounds like a great deal. Well, it's not a great deal. I'm doing all the work, but not all the work. But it just turned into like us doing a session and recording it. And it was fun. And the games were good and the quality was there. And then I'm just like, well, let's just keep doing it. Let's see how long we can do this for. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say, like, it looks like a full-blown production, right? Like, the quality and everything is amazing. And what I love about your channel is, A, obviously the quality and the games and the speed and frequency in which you release the content, which is mind-blowing to some of us out there, mere mortals. In addition to that, like, I've gotten to know everyone on the channel almost as if, like if I ever met Jacko or Kyle in person, like, there are jokes or like comments that I can make or parts of their personality where like, yeah, like I can kind of tell that they're this kind of person. And so now I know how to interact with them because they're almost like I know them, right? Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But, and I think that's what is probably my favorite part is that their personalities will shine through. And even yours, even like we don't even see you like behind the camera. And I kind of like the active judging style as well. Like, did you grab your glory? Are you sure that's what that card does? Because it's like, informational and educational at the same time. And so while I am enjoying the game and the competitive nature behind it and the personalities, like a newer player who is looking for content is like, oh wow, I didn't even know like that level of sportsmanship or even camaraderie and fair play existed, because in some of the other games it's not as prevalent. So essentially all of that is to say, really good job with all of that. And I love watching it. I know many other members of the community do as well.
Yeah, thank you. I think like the third person thing, I straight up copied from Tabletop Titans. If you watch their stuff, that's like, you can tell that the influence is coming from there, right? But they've got a third person behind the camera operating the show, which is kind of what I do as well. It is what I do as well. But adding that third person dynamic creates that conversation. The games, we've had a few games where we haven't had that person talking during lockdown. And I think the games I'm playing, we haven't had that commentator. And what happens is the two players get so focused on playing the game, they forget like to talk and have fun. And in the end, its content. And as much as everyone's like, oh, I watch it because I want to see high quality gameplay, you can see it on Vassal every day of the week. What you actually kind of want is a bit of personality, a bit of fun to go along with your high level gameplay. And that's kind of why that person's there. And we get a lot of flack for it. Benji, stop offering ideas. Stop talking. Just let them play. And it's like, it's not a tournament. This is content. If you want a tournament stuff, that stuff's out there. Go find that.
Yeah, well said. Well said. And you know, sometimes, you know, Kent will say some things when he's, you know, tagging in behind the camera as well when you're playing. And I say Kent because, like, the last time I saw you play, it was Kent behind the camera. So I'm sure there's others as well. But
he's the only one that has actually been trained on it. But the thing is that,
there you go.
For me, operating is second nature because it's literally my day job. I just come home and do it again.
Yeah.
But for Kent, he's a video editor by trade. But it's still very different. So he kind of knows some stuff, but he has to focus. So for him, it's it's not as easy. And honestly, props for Kent for even like giving it a go.
No,
it's a hard job.
I love that. Yeah, no, everybody on that show, on your channel, like I say it's a show, but it's a channel. All the content you guys make on your videos is great. So good. I'm glad you've kind of given us a background on like your background, how you got into gaming, Underworlds. So, and Tabletop Sydney, right? Creating content. So before we jump into the Reaper stuff, we're recording this on the day in which the riddles and the teasers for the new season of Warhammer Underworld season 6, Nether Maze, has been revealed. And so I kind of wanted to talk about the new warbands, right? I think we kind of got some teasers. But the two new warbands that are drawn to the nexus of the Nether Maze are the Shadeborn, which is a group of, I guess, witch elves that Morathi has sent to go kill. If you read the lore, there is like a group of dark elves who have like rebelled against Morathi and they hide in the Nether Maze. So their goal is to go in and kill them. And then there's Skittershanks Clawpack, who are just looking for more power for Clan Eshin, which is like the ninja assassin clan of the Skaven, you know, race. So, Benji, give me your first thoughts on Nether Maze, the warbands, and like, what do you think, man?
I like it. I think the elves, and I'm terrible with names, even after they've been out for a year, and I've seen these guys for an hour because I just woke up. So I'm struggling with all the names. But the elves look actually, I saw them in Warcry, the same, not the same models, but the same style, right?
Very similar.
Yeah. And I was like, man, they look awesome. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, they're going to make like an Age of Sigmar army with it at some point, and then probably a warband. I thought they'd do the Age of Sigmar army first and then the warband.
Yeah.
But I'm so happy they're bringing it to Underworlds first or second. But they look, those models look awesome. The rats, like, they look, I mean, I'm not a rat person. I'm sure Kent's really excited for them. He loves Scritch and all those boys. But like, even the models look sick. Compare them to like the first rats, and they're just night and day so much better.
Yeah, I completely agree with the I think they're called like Slythels. No, that's the leader's name. And the only reason I know that is because Games Workshop dropped a YouTube video on like how to paint the leader already before the box has even come out. Yeah, yeah. Oh,
good. I love those videos. They're religious for me. And when they don't release them, I get very upset because I don't know how to paint them otherwise.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of dry brushing. I think you'll like it. But my favorite miniature, so first of all, I mean, the Clan Eshin Skaven are insane, beautiful. Like, I'm not a big rat guy either. A lot of that has to do with, like, when I first started playing fantasy, there was this kid who would come around and he would just play Skaven and he would just, like, you know, destroy all of us. And so it was like, A, you know, I'm not a big fan of the whole rat aesthetic, but B, like, trauma. And so when Spiteclaw Swarm came out, like I didn't really play them very much. Actually, honestly, probably one of the warbands I played the least. And then I see these and I'm just like, A, these bases are insane. You know, like running along the wall, cool pipes, smoke bombs. And then like you add like the whole ninja aesthetic and they're like crouching and running. And it's like, dude, this is incredible. And like the small details, like I think it's the similar with like Nurglings. Like when you see Nurgle stuff, they'll just like throw random little Nurglings everywhere because they're cute. You like, I'm always genuinely surprised or looking for like where there's just a regular rat just hanging out on the miniature. And so like in one of the miniatures, like the guy with the net running across the wall, there's like a rat just running on. Yeah, he's the coolest one. I think the leader is the guy on the smoke bomb.
I thought it was the one on the pipe. I don't know. I'm so wrong in this. This is a straight up. You could be right, actually. Yeah. Maybe the base looks a bit bigger.
I think it's just because, like, a cape. you know, the whole.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe you're right. I don't know. We'll find out. It's very evident, though, on the Dark Elf side, who's the leader?
The big one.
The one who looks just like the Warcry one, yeah.
I do love that, like, no face look. That's awesome. And how they do it with, like, the glowing blue looks great. Mm. And I know I'm not going to be able to paint that, but I'm going to give it a damn try because, yeah.
I can't do that either. Well, there's, like, an achromatic blue contrast paint you could probably check out. That'll probably.
I've got that
or
somewhere.
Or it's a technical color. My favorite, though, is, and I call this set Crouching Elf Hidden Rat. Because it's just a bunch of assassins everywhere. But my favorite is the crouching elf with the crossbow. That is
crossbow. Oh, that guy.
Coolest with, one by far.
Full face mask up. You can see like one
full
eye.
Full face mask.
Yeah, that's
he's
awesome.
True assassin. Love that. So
I love that.
Very excited.
I don't know. Like it's a weird design. It looks like it's like layered, but like that whole thing, I'm just like that's sick.
I think it's like they blend in with. They're coming. Like they're one with the shadow. Right.
It's like them coming out of the shadow kind of thing.
Yeah. Exactly. And if you read the article, which we're not going to get too detailed into it, but apparently it says something along the lines of the rats are just trying to kill the enemy leader, and that's their inspire condition.
Yeah.
So, you know, damaging the enemy leader, which is pretty thematic for a bunch of assassin rats. I think that makes a lot of sense. And then for the other ones, I'm not really sure. It says they inspire if they attack who's already wounded. There we go.
So you might need some good ploys there so you can like ping off a damage and then throw them in there or something to get the inspire.
Yeah. I'm foreseeing the ping damage in this one for sure. And then there's more keywords, map and domain. And some of that is teased in the video. We're not going to get into it. But what do you think about like, you know, four Warband seasons?
I don't mind it because if you think about like it's models per year for me, right? It's how many sets do we get in a year? And they're doing two seasons and they're doing extra box essentially, but they're also doing less starters. I guess that means they won't release a map pack, which was always the tough pill to swallow when you're paying a bunch of money for like two boards.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, okay, but now they get coming to starter set, so it's an easier thing to get into. I actually like it. I think as long as the number of warbands coming out this year is like similar than last year, doesn't matter to me how they give it to me. If they want one box with eight warbands in it, I'll buy it anyway. So yeah.
I think there's more value. Where like a lot of people are complaining and there's talks about rotation, but none of that's been, you know, communicated yet. But I think the important thing is like, A, this is an amazing box. And like, this would have been cool as two separate warbands, but the fact that like you get all of this, you get all the tokens, cards, boards, even more boards, if you will, is really good for people who are not playing Underworlds right now. Like if you were to tell, like, imagine how many people are going to buy this box because there's like, two ninja assassin warbands pretty much, right? And everything you need to play the game, like they're gonna try it, whether they ultimately will become like full-time like or like committed to the game like we are, we'll see. But I think it's a really good, really beautiful set, and that artwork is fantastic.
Yeah, I think like the last starter, like Stormcast and Orcs, to be honest with you, like I bought it because I buy everything, but if I was a new player, I'm not excited by either of those two warbands. So the more boxes there are people that do love them. Don't get me wrong. There's tons of Stormcast players out there. People that love those swampy, people that do love the swampy orcs. But that's not me. So if I was a new player, I wouldn't buy it. But this one I would buy. So if you've got two options out there, people can, I don't like this one, but I do like this one. I'm going to buy the box. Then they own the game. And when you own the game, then you're like, I'll find a friend. We'll give it a try. And at that point, it's whether they do or don't like it. And that's all you can really do to get players into the game is just get them to play a game, see if they like it.
100%. Well said. So we're not going to, I guess, talk about another maze anymore, but we're very excited. And I'm sure Tabletop Sydney is going to make content for it. We'll be making content for it as well. So check out the blog and the podcast for our reviews and Tabletop Sydney's YouTube channel.
Yeah. Although we have had about a month with no videos, just for everyone watching, I'm moving house, so I can't record right now. That's why it's dead. I don't think anyone really, everyone's like, where's the videos? So we will be back.
Yeah. I completely empathize with that, man, because I am currently packing to move into our new home. So it's not fun. And
no.
I actually had to dig this mic out of the box because I tried using it. Like, I did because I was like, I don't think we'll record. And then, you know, all this Nethermaze stuff. And I was like, well, we're going to have to make it work somehow. So
yeah,
here we are. But cool. So let's get into the meat and potatoes, like why we've got you on here, is to talk about Kanan's Reapers. Mm. So I mentioned this on one of the previous podcasts. I think the most recent one was that there was an article on the Determined Effort blog by Discord name Baconborn, and there was an article called Ranks Broken by Dissent, Why Nobody Seems to Agree on Kanan's Reapers. And the article does a really good job of highlighting that while the warband kind of looks straightforward to play, there are different ways to play them, but also, despite the fact that they look so good on paper, they haven't necessarily, in most communities, right? Not all, but most communities and major tournaments haven't really claimed like that top spot. And everybody's kind of curious as to why. And in the article, he specifically mentions you and your community, Benji, and he talks about how, you know, you've been doing really well with them. And then when I went to your channel and started, you know, looking at older videos, and then people, like even in comments in your tier list, right? Your tier list, you guys rated them number one. And then even like, I think Kent or somebody mentioned like, yeah, no, don't play your Reapers, you know, like play something else in one of the videos. And I was like, okay, so obviously Benji's figured it out. What is he doing that everybody else isn't doing? How is he approaching the warband? And my hope is by the end of this conversation, I've learned a thing or two and our listeners have learned a thing or two about the warband. So let's talk about them. What is it about Kanan's Reapers that attracted you to them and made them worth learning and playing for you?
Yeah, so I got a little lucky, I think. My Age of Sigmar army is Ossiarch Bone Reapers. So when they did the initial teaser back at the start of season 4, I think it was, and they had all the icons, I saw that icon, I'm like, that's Bone Reapers, I'm hyped. And then lead up to it, I was hyped. They released like the models, the cards, all that stuff, and I was like, okay, this is good. I'm going to give this a try. I thought they would be a good warband. I started playing them, and they fit my playstyle perfectly. So everyone has a playstyle, right? If you watch our channel, you know it. And I think a lot of people don't realize this, but you have a playstyle because you lean towards warbands that you are familiar with or like playing, and you'll get better at that style. Playing aggro, for example, or hard aggro, like someone like Jacko, it seems easy because you just charge a lot, but there's so much nuance in like where you charge to, who you charge, what order, when do you play your cards, what's the math mm-hmm. behind it, that like unless you play it a lot, you don't get it. And I can play one of Jacko's decks. He can give you the deck. I can play the warband and I won't do as good as him because I don't have the hours into that style that he does. On the right. flip side, my style's greed. I play like stuff where I'm trying to outplay you, right? You're going to try and kill me or shut me down, but I'm going to do cheeky little things that score me big glory. And that's how I like to play. And Kanan's Reapers are the number one warband for doing that. Maybe the only other one is Soul Raid, which is weird because I actually don't think they're aggro, but that's a really different discussion.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic.
My Soul Raid deck is like dirty. I won't go into that though. But yeah. Kanan's is like, they have so many tools to do so many things. And on a turn, in an activation, most warbands are like, oh, I'm going to move or I'm going to charge. But Kanan's Reapers can be like, I'm going to charge, I'm going to go support, and I'm going to stand on objective. I'm going to do all those things in one activation. And when you're like getting towards the end of an activation phase, towards activation 3 and 4, being able to do that all at once gives you a position where you can score really greedy cards that you have no business scoring. So when I started playing them, and I put a lot of hours into them, I played a lot on Vassal. Back in those days, there's probably a lot of people that are like, man, Benji's grinding away games on them. And I played a lot of games in person. Mm-hmm. And I got to the point where I'm like, okay, I think at one point I probably had the most games of Kanan's. Definitely not now. I've sort of played other warbands, but I was like, okay, I feel really confident with them. I'm looking at other people's decks and I just don't think they're better than mine. Okay, cool. Let's start bringing them to events. And then I brought them to events and I did really well.
Well, yeah, okay. That makes a lot of sense. And one of the key things I heard there was, A, you like playing the warband because you like the aesthetic and you feel an affinity to the faction right through Age of Sigmar, which I think is actually a very underrated or less talked about feature of Warhammer Underworlds, where like, because like a lot of the top players will just say, I'm going to play whatever is the best, right? But then you're also saying something about styles where it's like, yeah, I played Crimson Court recently at Adepticon, and the reason I did that was because A, I felt like they're stat balls, they can kind of do well in combat, they have that passive scoring, but I also do like to lean aggro a little bit. Not the most, but like I'm a flex player who likes to lean aggro sometimes. And I did the same thing with the Profiteers, right, is when I played them a lot in Nightvolt. And so A, great affinity, great felt like you're a part of them, like ownership on the warband, because you know they're your army. It fits your playstyle, but then also the most important is you just grinded out a crap ton of games, right? And yeah. You were able to figure out the minutiae and the nuance behind the fighters, their matchups, and things like that. So when we're talking about Kanan's Reapers and we're talking about the fighters, you know, we've got Kanan, he's a big guy. We've got Kenta, who's like the second in command. And then we've got a bunch of just Reapers, right? Bone Reapers, whatever they're called. When you play the warband, like how do you like to best use each fighter? What do they like? How do they work together? And how do you think they play to their strengths and weaknesses to form like a cohesive competitive warband?
Yeah, I think that's a good point you said, because you're like, Kanan's the leader, Kenta's like the next one. Kenta's actually the best model in the warband, which seems weird. People are like, oh, Kanan, put buffs on him. And there are some good upgrades for him, don't get me wrong. But in a game where both of them live, I will use Kenta more than I will use Kanan, because Kenta has access to a lot of the good upgrades. The powered Netherite is disgusting. Plus one dice and plus one damage is like on a card. I don't know why it exists in the game. It's actually just really strong. And then Unnerving Synchrony is the other one. That card is also bonkers. The faction cards in that warband are crazy, which is one of the main, for me, a successful warband needs to have great faction cards and great fighter cards. So you need to have good stats, and you need to have and you need to have great access to upgrades and objectives and all that. And Kanan's has both those. I'd even argue that a lot of their cards are better than most of the warbands. I think there's a good point you raised around style. I think a lot of people assume that they can just learn every style. But I think that if you say, oh, I can learn every style and be the best at it, well, you're saying that the game's actually got a skill cap on it. Because if I spend 50 hours on Kanan's Reapers, am I no longer able to improve on them? I think you can. I think there's space there to keep getting better and better. And so if you spread yourselves amongst so many different styles of play trying to be an all-rounder, then you're just going to lose to someone who's just going to go deep into one style. And there's a difference there between style and warband. If you play just one warband, then what you're doing is you're putting your hopes that warband is meta relevant the whole time. And if they somehow drop off because a card gets rotated out or a better warband comes in and you don't move with that, then you're in trouble. But if you pick a style, like you want to play, okay, like you said, flex leaning aggro, that's a great style and you're probably really great with that. If I gave you my Kanan's deck, I don't know if you'd get the same success I have, because it's not a flex leaning aggro style deck.
Right.
So that's kind of my point there. A lot of the discussions I'm hearing are people being like, oh, I should just be able to pick up the deck and play it and be awesome with it. No, you got to practice it. It just takes time and learning. And that's the main thing that I think people are not grasping with Underworld sometimes.
That's a fair point. One thing that you, and I really do like that idea of, you know, because as someone who is also a content creator, someone who, you know, at one point was trying to, when it was actually attainable, it's actually, I think it's pretty much impossible at this point, but the Underworld's challenge where you went to local glass with every warband, there's too many now to count. But at the time, it was just like, I'm trying to just pick up a warband and play them. And I started realizing that after a while, it's actually very difficult, because not, and especially now with the game has become more focused on warbands doing niches, you know, particular things versus like same 15 cards in every deck, right? I don't think you really play the game like that anymore. Sure, there's some popular surges and stuff, but without going too deep into that. And I do really like how nowadays you'll see really good players at events and online who will always play something similar. Like my favorite, because of Tommy, right? He just dominated during Beastgrave in the Vassal tournaments and leagues. And like Tommy always played Thorns, but he, like, his first love was Sepulchral Guard, which plays very similarly to Thorns. And he also liked Kanan's Reapers. And you're thinking, well, Kanan's Reapers and Thorns aren't very similar, but the way Tommy played Thorns was like aggressive with his chain wraps and Varclav and the ever hanged and the Briar Queen. And so that's someone, and even like look at Michael Carlin, right? You know, before he retired from the game, it was like, Michael Carlin was like, I'm a deck builder first. So how is my deck going to give me every advantage that I need in our game before the game even begins? And then he would gravitate towards warbands that rewarded clever deck building, right? And like, and we all build decks, right? But that was just something that he loved. And so in this situation, you're telling me that you like the way Kanan's plays. So two questions, right? As well as any comments you have to anything I just said before you answer those questions is, first of all, what is Kanan Reaper's playstyle, right? In your mind, from someone who's done really well with them. Second, what warbands are considered to be that playstyle as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's hard to put names on things because like everyone calls them different things. I call it counterpunch, where like you react to what they do. But I'd also call it probably flex hold. So like towards the back end where you're playing flex because you have ability to kill, but you're generally trying to hold. That being said, like hold is a weird thing because back in Beastgrave, it was like you want to hold objectives. Now it's kind of like I call hold more like you want to score glory by doing things that aren't really attacking or killing. It's like stand in a gloom hex, get a glory. That's hold, even if you're not holding. Maybe we need to figure out.
Well, you're holding the gloom hex, right?
Yeah.
The cover hex or whatever.
But basically, I like to play Kanan's the way I build it. And here's the thing, because they're such an awesome warband, you can play them hard aggro and you might find success with it. I just personally don't think it's the best way to play them because what you end up doing is with three move, you overextend something or someone or you leave someone behind and then you get taken apart piecemeal. I think Kanan's works best when you can just like instantly move them into a group and have a big blob. And so they come charging. They might, you know, probably going to kill someone because let's be real, two wounds, not great. But then when they've done that, then you're like, well, now you're next to Kanan and two supports. I'm just going to bop you. And you trade one for one. You got six models. You can do that pretty easily against most warbands. And it kind of works. So I play that style. Other warbands that I do like playing that are similar, Zarbags, I think actually, they haven't got the counterpunch as well, but like, the way I play them, you don't want to come charging in willy-nilly into me because I'll throw Snurk or someone into you.
Or the Squigs.
The Squigs are two hammers, two damage on Inspired. Oh, my goodness. Those things are dirty. Everyone always goes, are they Inspired to do two hammers, two damage? No. Wait until they get Inspired to get the third hammer.
Yeah. I was talking to just size quick tie tangent on Zarbag's Gits. Like, if you look at their fighter attack profiles, just the attack profiles, they literally have Magor's Fiends built into the warband in addition to, like, of five other bodies.
Yeah. It's a shame that all the wounds are split amongst all these different models that make it easier to rip apart, right?
Yeah.
The other warbands I played Grimwatch for a while. I don't think they're the same style, but like I lean away from aggro. I don't like rolling dice and having to rely on that dice roll to be whether I win or lose a game. I want to win because I'm a chess player. I want to sit there and play chess against you. I want to think 10 moves in ahead and go, I'm going to be on that objective at the end of this round. You don't know it yet. I know it. I know how I'm going to get there. And I've got this card that lets me do that. I'm going to play it at the right time where you can't counter me. And that's how I like to sit there and play. So the dice rolling, I'd prefer if there was no dice roll in this game. If you just like, you know, maybe, I don't know, just always hit all the time or whatever. I don't know. I'd rather that because then I could solve it better. The dice adds this variable element where I've got to on the fly adapt, which is fun. But you know, if I want to win 100% of the time, I don't like the variable. But yeah, it is what it is.
That's fair, and it's really interesting you say that because, like, a lot of times, will is a very popular sentiment, especially in like Discords. Is like, if you want to go play chess, play dice. You know, like this is a dice game. But then, like the way that you're describing it, like I played in the LVO in I think 2020, like right before COVID started, or was that 2019? 2020, I think, like right before COVID. And I played like this Thorns deck where it's like, I'm not really trying to fight you. I'm just trying to hold objectives. And what I realized, and much appreciation to players like you who love playing this style of warband, was like, I made it to the final. Like, I did pretty decent, like pretty well with them, honestly, if I'm going to be honest. But like, I was exhausted more so than I've ever played some of the more like, well, let's see what happens if I roll, you know, hopefully I get a crit on this attack roll, because it was like, I was stressed on, because you can't control your opponent's dice, right? So it's like, you know, I hope they don't crit. I hope they don't hit me, or like, hopefully I can roll a defensive crit. So there's like an added element of stress to this like counterpunch or like flex hold that you've talked about. But it's also like, I have to figure out how to get on the points where I need to while not dying. But while stopping you from trying to do what you're trying to do, and in some cases, and more often than not, you know, eliminating a threat so that I can do step two, which is, you know, stop you from your game plan. So how do you feel about just that play style in general? Like, do you feel like it's really stressful in some cases, or
that's funny because what's your experience? I have the opposite experience where like when I play a game like that, I'm like super, like, I just feel like I'm like, it's just great. I'm just zen. It's great. The thing is, when I play aggro, I feel like that. I finished an aggro game and I'm like, I just want to flip this table. I hate playing this. I played a few weeks ago, I played Despoilers and I was running full illusions. It was just like I was just send it. You just every turn just sent something in and tried to trade one for one. And yeah. I played it against like, we have a weekly group that we play with. I played against Craig and all those guys. And by the end of the day, I think I went like even, I went 3-3 or something. But I just hated it. I was just like, well, I lose my brain. My brain is turned off. I'm just moving pieces around the board. But when you win and the win is one thing. When you win with dice, I'm like, oh, that sucks. Like everyone gets those wins and those losses, right? Where you might have outplayed them, but it didn't matter because you rolled nothing but crits. They rolled nothing but single supports and whatever you did is negated. Those don't feel good. What feels good to me is when we play a game, the dice don't have any big impact. It's like kind of even, maybe one or two that matter. And then like you finish and you're like, I've got 10 more glory than you because I just outplayed the hell out of you. And that is the feeling that I grasp for in this game.
I love that. Yeah. And I mean, and it is a great feeling, right? Is to know that the whole idea is that eventually at a certain point, especially in a tournament, it's like players are matched equals squill. And it's just like, who's making less mistakes in the game? And sure, dice can impact that, draw order can impact that, but I completely agree with that feeling. But I don't mind if every once in a while I roll a crit to get there.
Single defense dice, you're like, oh, I'll just roll a crit there, and there you go.
Yeah.
Five dagger attack has just failed.
Yeah, or sometimes, you know, someone will just be like, I rolled just a crit, and I'm like, just a crit, eh? Okay,
I say that. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a weird response, because I say just a crit, because I've rolled five dice, and I've only gotten one result, so for me, I'm that's like, right. Oh, that's all it is, but yeah, you're right, it is kind of true when I say just a crit.
Sometimes we'll I did it too sometimes, and it's like, I just remember like one of the last games I played was like two smash attack and it's like just a crit. And I'm like, okay.
Just two crits. Oh, whoops.
Yeah. Oops. Okay, cool. So that's the play style. You've identified some warbands that are similar. So maybe people who like those warbands can check out Kanan's Reapers and mess around with them. Let's get into some of the more nitty gritty aspects of it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Kenta is your favorite fighter, or maybe not favorite, but the best fighter.
I didn't answer that question of yours, did I? I went on a complete tangent.
Well,
you asked me about the models, and I went, well, let's go on the side.
Let's just jump back to that then. Yeah, thanks for bringing me back on track. Tell me about the fighters.
So I'll break them all down, because there's only six of them, and they're pretty quick. So Kenta is who I put most of my upgrades on. Because one, you can bring him back with the resurrection card. I forget the name of blanking.
Partial Resurrection.
That's the one. Yeah, you can bring him back. He's not the leader. Kanan's a leader. Mm-hmm. So if he dies, bring him back on one wound, then you can kind of keep him safe from there. Kanan's good. Kanan is like the meat bag that everybody looks at the warband and says, oh, I've got to kill Kanan and I win the game. Not true. The more tech and more dangerous. But Kanan gets a lot of attention and he can soak a lot of damage. When you put him at the front, like, and especially with Dire Ultimatum, you kind of play that card. If you get it round one, just play it at start and be like, all right, you got to waste a whole activation charging a full health Kanan. And then you're next to Kanan. So it's like, well, how are you doing that?
It's a win-win for you. Yeah.
It's just a great... You're limiting their options. You're saying, here are your choices. You can lose a dice on all your attacks, or you can attack Kanan. I like both those results. You like neither of them. It's win-win. You have a choice, though. Mm-hmm. So, you know. Going down to Mortek. So Senna and Naru are very similar. They're both...
They're the shield guys, right?
Yeah. So the difference is that Senna inspires to daggers, which means to me he's a little bit worse because you have plus one dice with empowered Natterite. So Senna for me is the guy I put. I put him in the position where if there's a Mortek to die, he's the one that dies first because he is not as useful as Naru.
Because he's rolling on
Three Fury. I call him daggers, you call him Fury. Whereas Naru stays on hammers. So if you get plus one dice, then the hammers is better to get that on. So.
Oh, that's right. I see what you're saying. Okay. Yep.
So otherwise they're identical. They're good. Two defense when inspired is nice, but generally they're dead before you inspire. They're bodies, from my opinion. Hakor is your early game powerhouse. He's the only one that starts two damage. He doesn't have Natterite though, so you don't get to you can't get up to that three. I don't think he can take empowered Natterite. No, he can't. So like he's the one that like round one, I want him to get a charge off into something, and then he'll probably die. So Karu, Senna, and Hakor are the ones that kind of die first. And the order depends on the game. And then Nohem's the archer. Now, the archer's actually kind of good. First of all, because you can charge onto an objective and then still Mortek advance in a round into support. And he has Natterite, so you can get a two damage archer shot with just getting a support, which is like two damage archers are like rare in this game. But he's good. He's probably the better one. And also it's very easy with him with Unnerving Synchrony because you can have Kenta next to him who has Unnerving Synchrony. The archer can shoot one person, then Kenta can react off that. You don't have to be so close. So I think Noham and Kenta work well together. That being said, they do need support. But generally, that's how it works. I think Karu, I try and save for late game as well. So I'll probably throw Center out to die, keep Karu back. Later on, he comes in with two damage Natterite, which is three damage a lot of the time. And yeah, that's it. Kenta is the powerhouse. Keep him alive, guys. He is very important. In my games, he's always at the back. He's always back middle, and he activates late in the activation. So he comes in later.
Hmm. Okay. I think that's a really good summary of the fighters in the warband. And I echo the sentiments on Kenta. As a side tangent, I played in like my first game in the Vassal League today. And I was like, I'm going to try Reapers, you know, A, in preparation for this episode. B, I've been actually wanting to try them. And this is part of, you know, part of the selfish reason why I've actually got you on as well as creating content is like, I want to learn as well, right? I'm also a student of the game. And so I built the deck in a really weird way where it's like, everyone's holding objectives and Kanan, Kenta, and Hakor are just fighting people. And it was just like, put Soundless Step on Kanan, run around, smack. And I got lucky. I played into a good matchup for me, which was Truth Seekers. So it was like, you know, if I can just smack, which is actually really interesting because once you kill one, the other two inspire and then they get on two block, which is difficult in some cases. But it just worked out and it helped me with the inspire. So that isn't how you're playing it, right? So you're focusing on Kenta, Mortex, Natterite, damage. So questions off that. A, let's start with Natterite. Do you ever rely on it, or is it just like, nice to have? Because like you mentioned earlier that you don't like that Senna has, you know, three Fury or daggers or whatever. But in my head, I'm thinking like, well, if there's supports, one extra dice means he's more likely to roll a half support, right? What's your idea there?
Yeah, so that's a good question, actually. Very good question. I generally, well, for me, I like reliability. One of the reasons I play this is because I don't like rolling dice. But if I'm rolling a dice and 5 out of 6 of the results are successes, that's you're not really rolling dice at that point. You're just seeing it like, can you get a crit, really? So Senna for me is a 4 out of 6 success with 2 supports, which like, that's okay. But I'd rather have the 5, which is why I prefer the hammers.
Makes sense.
Natterite for me is, I'd never rely on it, ever. I think the only time I'd rely on it is if like I'm out of options and I just need to kill this thing and I have nothing better. Okay, I only kill it if I get the support on this. I would try and find a way to reroll or get more dice. I try and increase my chances, but I won't ever like turn one be like, well, if I do this, because what happens when you roll 3 crits, right? Like then you don't get Natterite because you got to roll the support to go with it. And it's just, it's too unreliable for me, because 2 out of 6 results is a 5+ on a 6-sided dice, which is
right
fine. But if you're rolling 2 dice and hoping for a 5+, it's not. Yeah. So to me, it's a Hail Mary. It's like, I got no better option here, or it's just a nice, oh, look, a little bonus. Got an extra damage there where I didn't expect it. And that kind of makes my job a bit easier in this game, because now I only need to do 1 damage to him. So Noham can shoot him instead of having to throw 2 damage into him.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay. Yeah, and that's one thing that, like, I'm going to be honest, man. Like, when I was making attacks earlier, I didn't even remember to check for Natterite, right? Because it's like, it just almost never came up when I wanted it to. So I'm sure there were a couple rolls where both me and my opponent both missed the half support is relative in this particular action. That's really interesting. Let's talk about the Inspire. So is your plan to Inspire when you play games? Is it just like, if it happens, it happens? Because I feel like, today in my game, when I played earlier, like I played against Jared, really nice guy. And I just like, you know, Kanan just killed Stormcast, 4 damage. It just happens sometimes. And I was just like, oh, I'm getting a lot of tithe counters, right? Because for 4 wounds or more, you get 2 tithe counters. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, I'll throw in a reroll or I'll throw in an extra damage. And I'm just wondering, like, is that like, A, you've clarified that Kenta is more important and you would rather invest more options in him. Whereas like Kanan just seems like a threat when he's really not. But I feel like Kanan is key to inspiring the warband if you want to do that. Am I right there? Am I wrong? What do you think about the Inspire?
Yeah, the Inspire for me, I kind of, in most of my games, I almost reliably inspire middle to end of round 2. That's kind of like when I get it. If I get it earlier than that, then like I've already won the game because it means I've killed like either three or four guys, little guys, or like two big guys. Right. Like if you kill two Stormcasts in that matchup, yeah, you inspire, but then they've got one Stormcast and a bird left and like you don't need the inspire at that point. So I think it's nice. I say, you know, Kenta is the core of it, but if Kenta dies, you need to use Kanan to get kills because, you know, him with one damage isn't going to do anything. So like the inspire helps Kanan a lot. It gives him that two shields, which is pretty good. One shield is kind of like, yeah, you know, might be okay, but probably not. But two shields is like, okay, now you got some serious defense. Also gives Kenta cleave, which is really useful against Stormcast. With tokens, the way I play it, I don't get too complicated with it. I don't spend them until I inspire. And when I inspire, I spend them as soon as I can. I think the inspire is powerful. I think getting two shields and three of your fighters is big. And I think a lot of them get extra damage. Senna, Karu get damage. Kanan actually gets damage. And then yeah, they don't get damage.
No joke.
Yeah. And then they get either cleave or they get extra, like extra hammer for no him. So like it's a good buff for the inspire, but I also don't run like the cards that like, you know, the cards, I'm terrible with names.
The tithe ones. Or it's like paying the tithe, right? Yeah.
You either give me two tithe or you get to, I get to reroll. And I don't run those because they're always going to pick the one you don't want. And you very rarely ever want both of them. So I give my opponents choices. I want the choices, not them. So yeah.
Right. And I'm glad you proactively brought that up because that was my next question is what do you think about those cards? So
yeah. Don't run them. Never. I ran them initially and then I'm like, oh, I need tithe here. And he's like, I have the rerolls. And I'm like, oh, cool. Now I get a one, like round one, Senna getting a full rerolls on his one damage Natterite attack is like not going to do anything for your game. And then round three, you play it. You're like, I need that reroll to get that kill. And they're like, have two tithe to add to your pile of six. It's like,
yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Good point. And a good example. Okay. So we've talked about the Inspire. We've talked about the Bone Tie, the Natterite. Earlier, you mentioned the Mortec Advance, right? And I think this is like one of the best parts about this warband is, you know, the Mortecs like kind of walk up like a phalanx and then they just like, you know, gangbang people. So like my question is like, how do you set up your board, right? Is it like, are you, when you're setting up your fighters, is it like Zarbag's Gits? And now I'm kind of seeing where that connection makes sense because like with Zarbag's Gits, I've often found that you have to pre-plan the objectives and the boards and the fighters so that when you scurry, you know, it all kind of works out and you end up where you need to be. You're doing the same thing, I'm assuming, with this warband. How often is board placement and setup, how important rather is it? And are you placing fighters knowing that they're going to end up somewhere else off a Mortec Advance?
So kind of. So that's another great question. How I'll say it is, I generally play flex but hold. So with my I'm fighting on my board almost every game. Like most warbands are coming to me because I have the grittier deck. So if they don't come to me and we both score, I win. So I'm making them come to me.
Fair.
The few that have to go into them are things that are like Zarbags, for example. I'm not going to outscore a good Zarbags player, so I've got to go to them, but that's a different game. Assuming it's 90% of the games, I don't care how they play their board. I've got my boards that I know I play, and I play like terrible with names of them, but like ones that don't have any blocked hexes, ones that have no lethal hexes, no hexes at all, just everything close together. Because what I want to do is make a block. Nice big block with Kanan preferably in the middle to keep all the Mortec nice and safe and play around that. I want everything together in a phalanx, essentially. That way when they charge in, I don't need to like get guys into position. They're already in position. And because of how the warband works, you can essentially do that in one activation at the end of round one. Mm-hmm. As far as objectives go, objective is actually a whole nother game, like sitting there and figure out where to place them, especially in Harrow Deep. But I'll basically try and place them so I get two in my territory. There's a card for Kanan's called Pride of the Emissary and Cast, I think it is. It's a Surge.
Yep, it's a Kanan. Surge holding Yep.
That one.
Kanan has to hold an objective in
that is territory. The worst card I could put in my deck possible because it puts Kanan forward and the Mortec stay back. So it separates him from where he wants to be. So I never run.
Yep.
I actually think it's a bait for how I play. But I see a lot of people playing it and power to them, have fun with it. But if you find that Kanan is not in the right spot for your games, I'm telling you, look at that card because it seems easy to score and it is easy to score, but one glory is not worth losing all your Mortec for. So I run things where I sit back, chill, things like, you know, Impending Doom, Orchestrated Kill, those cards are like really good for him. and then I'll pick two objectives. I'll put them as close together as I can in my territory so that I can just pop guys on them and they're all within range of each other. And how I deploy is also very simple. I'll put Kenta at the back in as center as I can so he can sort of go anywhere because I need him in the fight. At the end of round one, he needs to be in position to attack. Kanan will be at the front most of the time unless I draw Dire Ultimatum in my hand, in which case I'll put him at the back so I can play that and make them dive really deep for him.
Oh.
And then I'll put Hakor and Nohem at the back because Hakor is actually really good. So I don't want him getting charged and killed instantly. I want Senna and Naru dying and then Hakor goes in. So Senna and Naru at the front as well with Kanan. Kanan's more at the front, but Kanan can take a charge and then you just counter charge into him and just keep him alive. It's fun.
That's so interesting. And I like that play with the one where if you don't hit Kanan, it's minus one die, right? Like this Dire Ultimatum. Is that what it is?
That's it. If you play against me and you see it at the back, you know what I got in my hand. It's pretty telegraphed. Yeah. Then what are you going to do about it? Right?
You can't. I mean, hope you roll a crit, right? That's all you can try to hope for. I'm still trying to wrap my hand around Karu and Senna dying early because like in my mind, I'm like, oh, they inspired a two block. But I think maybe that's just like my brain just trying to rewire like, and it's just not coping because it's like, oh, I kind of want, two fighters holding a gloom hex with two block on guard. Like that sounds amazing, but like that's not the game plan, right? Like,
no, but it's also with those two, my first activations are to center, bring everything together, right? Onto objectives. So like they'll be at the front. They might charge one and kill it. But then for my first activation, I'll pull the other one back, right? Mm. So I'll pull them out of range. Because a lot of how I play Kanan's is by zoning. Yeah, you've got all these models that are going to try and charge me. But if you're 5 or 6 hexes away, you aren't going to charge me. You can't charge me. And then that's fine. So then you got to move forward and then I get to counter you, right? It's just about trying to play the board a bit. So yeah, you lose more techs in the game. And how you deploy them determines which ones you lose. So look at your more techs. And maybe you don't like Nohem. Nohem's the other one that people sometimes don't. I like him because he works well with Kenta. But if you're like, oh, Nohem doesn't do good for me, but I love Senna, he wins me games, then put Nohem at the front. But you have to put something there because you like at the end of round one, if all six are alive, then you've won the game. But that never really happens. So you've got to pick which ones you lose first.
I think that makes a lot of sense. So you've mentioned this a couple times now about putting them in a block, making the enemy come to the block, punishing them for, you trade one for six or whatever. Like, you play crushes. If the idea is like you trade four fighters for three fighters or five fighters for three fighters, it's still a good trade for you, right?
Yeah.
What happens when you see Mighty Swing?
That's a good point. You position in a way where they can't get more than two. That's the key thing. So the two hit Mighty Swing, that hurts. They might kill two Mortec. But if they kill Senna and Karu, or like Hakor and Nohem or something, like whatever. As long as they're not hitting Kanan and Kenta, I'm good. So yeah, they'll get that and they'll feel really good for them. And that hurts when they both connect and they both kill. And the thing with putting in a block as well, sometimes you can get some trapped hexes there. So you got to be careful with your trapped as well. You don't want to be trapped when you don't need to be.
Right.
But then they do that. Then they're sitting next to, like, Kanan should be basically next to all your Mortec. And so then they're in range of Kanan, and Kanan can just turn around and kill him. So they'll
just
kill two Mortec. Yeah. You'll kill this model. And if it killed two Mortec, it's probably got 3 or 4 wounds. It's probably decent value for their team. And then you play from there. But they only get one of them. They get that once. They can't do it every round. So,
Well, unless they have scything, right? So it's like, so when the fighter is scything, like, is that like a priority for you to kill quickly, or what does that look like for you?
Rippers is actually a problematic warband for them for many reasons, but mostly because Stabbit gets scything on Inspire. So Stabbit becomes like the number one model to kill in that matchup because if he gets scything and then great strength, he will kill everything. So, noticing scything and prioritizing is important. Mighty Swing's strong because it's out of nowhere. You don't see it coming. You can't anticipate it.
Right.
Whereas all the built-in scythings are all like telegraphed. Okay, I know he has scything. I know he can get to here and can do this. How do I counter that? And then make sure you have an answer for it. Or if you don't have an answer for it, spend money activations to negate that threat.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Okay. So, a question, just because I just want to know, like, when you play Rippa, is like, do you let them inspire, or do you just, is it kill Rippa quick, or is it kill Stabbit quick?
Kill Stabbit quick. I won't target Rippa. He can have his charge. He can kill a Mortec, sure, but like, I will, if Stabbit inspires and gets a single siphoning attack off, if he gets some hits and then his dog gets a bite as well, like, it's a rough matchup. He needs to die first, Ripper second. The bow guy is, he's good, but he, you know, whatever. It's not important.
Right. Okay. So thanks for sharing that. I think, like, what I really like to hear about how you're playing them, and which is why I think you're doing so well, is right now a lot of the meta is like, and I think Davey said this on What the Hacks, but it's like invasive aggro.
Yes. Yes.
It's like just jump on the enemy territory, jump on their gloom hexes, score Fearless Seekers, Horrors in the Dark. And you're just like, oh yeah, come in, come try to get on my hexes, because I'll just murder you. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really good. And I know that you believe that they're the best warband in the meta. Is that a reflection of just your local meta, or is that just in the game you think Kanan's is top dog?
I think in our local meta for sure. I actually had to stop playing them because I was getting a bit bored. Like, how do I say this? I was winning a lot and I was just like getting bored with the warband. So I changed. So I think not just me, but everyone in the group was kind of like, oh, do I want to play Ben? He's got Kanan's. I've played him 5 times. I know what it's like.
Right.
I think that they're not heads and shoulders above everyone else is the best. I think Sol Ray right now is really good. And Sol Ray is actually a difficult matchup for them, but it is winnable. But I think because you're right, the meta is go into your enemy's territory and stand on things. Kanan's weakness is movement. So if they're coming to you, then they're kind of negating your weakness, which is really nice. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Everyone else comes into my territory. The hard games are actually the ones where, like, you're playing against a Grimwatch or something and they offset you and you've got to get into their territory. Those games are painful. Those are a grind. Like, trying to win that is like, ugh, I hate those games. So when they come to you, yeah, they'll kill a Mortec. They might have super accurate attacks. They might feel good about that, but it's about what you do on your activations and how you shut them down. If you're killing like the crab or the one that comes back, I'm terrible with names, then that's your own fault because they're going to come back or they're not going to die because they're 2 shields. You've got to be critical with your target selection as well as having objectives that you can, if you have objectives, you need to be able to outscore your opponent's objectives with them.
Yeah, Tamael, that's the one Tamael. That comes back.
Yeah.
And
killing
and
him
is Claw, our crab and savior.
Yeah. Crab won't die to anything.
He's Tamael, so hard to kill.
Tamael's just going to come back. So don't waste your energy attacking him. So go stand on objectives or put yourself in gloom or something to save yourself a bit more.
Okay. So I think we've done a really good job of talking about the warband's strengths. And then I think you've just started, like, it was, again, wonderful segue. You're natural. Is talking about the weaknesses, right?
Yeah.
So offset, you have to be the beatdown, the aggressor. Are you running cards that will help you win those matchups, like Eternal Chase? I feel like Eternal Chase is really popular with Bone Reapers. Are you running Commanding Stride in general? How do you feel about pushes? Kind of give me your philosophy on, like, the cards that you like, but also what are Kanan's weaknesses and how do you fight those?
Yeah, so he has weaknesses. Obviously, every warband has weaknesses. I think that Kanan's is the most susceptible to the bad dice games you have. Kanan's will fall over harder than any other warband. If your opponent's making attacks and you're not making defense rolls, you're not losing damage. You're losing models. So a warband with 4 wounds, for example, might take 2 damage where they probably shouldn't have mathematically, but you will lose a model, and that hurts you more. So, like, when you lose those games, it's going to feel real bad, and you need to be ready for that. I think they also suffer to, like, rippers, because just having just random 2 damage attacks being thrown out, if they don't connect, it's fine. But the second they start hitting with some of those dog bites, you start losing models. Like, you're not, it's not little chip damage.
It's not fun.
Your warband falls apart. And that scything's really hard. So rippers is really hard. The other hard warband is Sol Raid, because they are so accurate. And they do get cleave, and they have a ton of movement, so you can't zone them as well. There's so many things in that warband that shut yours down, but both those matchups are winnable. I've beaten both of those against good players, so don't give up. As far as movement stuff, I do run Eternal Chase. Also run Never Falter, which is the +1 move for Mortex. So for 2 rounds, I'm moving 4, which is decent. I do not run Commanding Stride because I want Kanan in the middle. So my Mortec moved to Kanan. That's how I
see. And so then he's like a tree and they're the branches and I get you.
Yeah. And then if Kanan doesn't need to move from there, like, you have enough models that, like, I find Commanding Stride's good for like models with low model count. So warbands with low model count, because you want to push, attack, then charge. You want to get more activations out of your big models. With Kanans, you've got so many models that like you're not struggling to find things to do with the activations. So you don't need to push as much.
Right.
That being said, I do run counter charge, center of attention, and mirror move. Center of attention is the best card in the game. No one will ever convince me otherwise. That card has so much utility for so many things.
It pulls. Is it best card of the game for Reapers, or is it best card of the game in general?
It'll be in every deck I build for championship, because
that's a hot take.
Because you can use it so many ways. You can use it defensively. Yeah. You can use it to pull them off objectives in their territory. You can use it to like pull them into you. You can use it to pull them away from you. Like you're always going to find that if you ever need a card that like gets you out of a sticky situation and you have that in your hand, there's a solution somewhere. You just got to find it. And then I run counter charge because it's just really good to like they charge in, then Kanan suddenly next to them. So like that's kind of scary for them.
Surprise.
Mirror move is my counter to counter charge, because everyone plays counter charge against Kanan's Reapers. Like, ha, shut down your Mortic Advance. It's like, well, actually, I didn't need it, but still, here's mirror move just so I can get what I wanted anyway.
Right. I like that. I like the redundancy. I think that's really important. And that makes a lot of sense in the way that you're trying to play the warband. So you mentioned that your deck is really passive. Yep. In theory, or greedy, right, is the word you use.
Yeah.
How is it greedy? Because are you at least holding two cover hexes while forming this block, or how is that working? Like, what's the idea here?
Yeah.
And you don't have to, you know, reveal your deck per se, but just like general types of cards, you know, if you don't want to share specific cards.
Yeah. So my deck in last season was probably a bit better. With the new season, the rotation, I lost a lot of good cards. Like Scrum, for example, was it just a no-brainer for me? I would score that every game.
They have like a faction end phase, right? That does the same thing?
Kind of. They have Walking Mass Grave, which is everyone has a mutual charge token. But that's one glory. So I'll go through my end phases, I think, currently. And I mean, I've built greedier decks with Zarbags. I had a 30 glory deck at one point, but this one's an 18 glory. It's all right. So my end phases are Demolish, which I think is just easy, because like they're
demolish the opposition.
Yeah, no enemy fighters in enemy territory. Like they're coming to you anyway, so like even if you don't kill them all, then like you still get it.
And the cool part about that card is if they try to stop the score, then it reduces their efficiency of fighting you.
Yep.
So it's I like that. Nice.
And then they come in, they die anyway. Path of victory. That's like path of victory is the cane. That's how I play, right? I'm holding two and I'm gonna count. I'm gonna kill someone when they come in. I'm a scant dom. And they're the two sort of like hold cards. And then I play Creative for War, because it's actually more of an offensive card. It's make four attacks in a round. But with Unnerving Synchrony, that's like easy. And then Kanan has a scything attack. So if you're ever down by two, you just throw a scything in there and you got two. Like that's an easy score. And then Walking Mass Grave, which is just everyone on your team has a move or charge token, which with Mortec Advance is just making sure you don't forget about Kanan. So,
right.
Yeah. But all those cards, the only one I need to kill for is Path of Victory.
Yeah.
Everything else is kind of like just stand on things. So, yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, because like I was running, like so today, for example, like I had Path of Victory, I had Wasteland, right? Wasteland is just like no tokens and either, you know. Yeah,
it's one glory though, so it's not great enough for me, you know.
Fair enough. I had Scant, you know, I think it's a great card. Dominant Position.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the way I built this deck, and this is a segue into the next kind of questions I want to ask you, is like right now, I think Kanan's is one of the few warbands where you can really like tee up or, you know, pile up the fact that you can take a lot of cards where your leader can get a kill, right? You have Death Champion,
Martial Mage.
You have Martial Mage, and you have Savage Exemplar. And I ran all three today and it was nice, but it also is like, I also ran Pride of the Semisarian cast, so I know you're not gonna. I'm already like failing in your eyes.
But you're in a different deck to me, though. You're going in. Yeah. Right? So
I'm just. Well, yeah, it's just more so hold objectives in the back, and then Kanan just does this big thing, right?
Yeah.
Swipes around. And so, do you like kill something with Kanan cards? And then also, how do you feel about Primacy and this warband? Because like I also ran Awesome Predator because I was trying to bank on Primacy, despite the fact that, because the idea was you'll never get to my backline. That was the goal of this deck. What do you think?
That's a good question. So I used to run Martial Mage and Savage Exemplar. I didn't run Death Champion because this is before those cards were out. This is like last season. And I ended up replacing them. So the cards I actually, that's my Surges as well, just so you can kind of understand what I'm at. I've got Unequal Contest, Contest of Equals, because I think those are two just really easy to score cards. Mm-hmm. Orchestrated Kill, because obviously, like, that's easy. Impending Doom, also easy with Mortic Advance. And then Tithe Masters, which is get two glory in a round. That's pretty simple. And then Gruesome Certainty, which is get a crit. That's probably the riskier one, but I don't... To getting a kill, I find every time I got it, it would shift my brain, would be like, I need to get a kill now. But the right mm-hmm. thing for the board state might be, you need to be patient, you need to stand on objectives and wait, right? So right. What I didn't want is a card in my hand trying to convince me to do something I didn't want to do. Because then when I play games, I would maybe get that kill, and then I'd lose the game, and I'd look back and go, why did I lose that game? And I'd be like, well, why did you break up your position? Why did you dive forward for that kill? It's like, well, I wanted that one glory. Yeah, but then right. they came in and killed three Mortec and got three glory, and you lost half your warband. And so I'm like, well, I can either, in the heat of a moment, try and like train my brain not to do that stuff and be patient, or I can take the temptation out of my deck and put in cards that are just as easy to score and are more in line with my game plan. So I think... You're right. Those cards are really great and probably more reliable to score than like Gruesome Certainty. But I want my deck to be focused on something. I want to do this thing. I want to do it really well. I don't want to try and be, it's not about efficiency for me. It's about being specific, I think.
Mm. Okay. And then what about Primacy?
Primacy. I took all those cards out of my deck. As soon as the season rolled over, and I was looking at decks, and I saw, actually, when they restricted Underdog and they restricted Everything to Prove, when those two happened, I was like, okay, which Primacy cards are people taking their deck now? And I'm like, there isn't any must takes. So there's a chance people are running decks without Primacy. And in games where there is, where I get to choose whether there's Primacy or not, do I want it? And I'm like, I got two inviters. I don't want it. So I took out Underdog and I took out Everything to Prove because I ran my deck. And I have not looked back. I think that right now Primacy is a choice. And if you're not playing like leaning aggro at least, then you just shouldn't run it because it's glory for your opponent.
Fair enough. I think that makes a lot of sense. So because of the restricted list limitations, you were just like, eh, it's not worth the trouble anymore.
Well, it's as soon as I realized, because if my opponent was always going to take it, like last season, it didn't matter.
Yeah, it was almost every game.
It's in every game, yeah. But this season, I don't think it's in every game. Even if it is now, as time goes on, it'll be less and less. And so I'm at the point now where I think if I don't want Primacy, I'm not going to put... It's always those two cards, Underdog and Everything to Prove for my decks. That's sort of the two that I'm picking. But like, I've got good cards. I don't need those cards. This warband has... Like, I've got four faction objectives in my deck, which is very high for a lot of warbands. Most warbands get like one or two good ones. And so I'm not hurting for good objectives. Whereas other warbands might be, like Zarbags, for example, you got Infestation, and then what are you running? Like, there's not many good ones in that deck. So you kind of have to run Underdog there because you need to have a good objective deck to get that nice flow going, to get that glory coming in, right?
That makes sense. Now, let's talk about restricted cards. So, you know, you mentioned Partial Res, you like it, you got Contest of Equals. So, what's your and Scant, right? Is that the third?
Scant, Contest Equals, Partial Resurrection. Yeah. Actually, I'm on my old deck because I got hit really hard with that last change. I think I had eight.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. So, I'll tell you what I took out. So, I lost Everything to Prove. I lost Underdog. Those were two. I lost Punching Up because that was really good.
That's a good card.
I lost Duel of Wits, which is good, but hey, restricted now.
It was an auto include. Yeah.
And Savage Soldier. I love that card so much, but. It came out.
Yeah. But the cool thing is that you figure out a way to still do what you want to do and do it well to the point where you don't play them anymore because it was too good in some cases, right?
Yeah. Like Punching Up was a good, like when they come in and you throw Punching Up on Hakor, not Hakor. Yeah, Hakor actually. It's just this threat out of nowhere. Like they'll look at their board state and go, if I charge in here, I'm going to get two turns to sit there and he can't kill me because he hasn't got the position. But those kind of cards, they commit and then you can counter them with cards they can't see. And those are what I like playing. They're kind of like gotchas almost. The best example, that's Berserk Fortitude, right? From Morgox. That card's dirty. And it's if it was an upgrade, it wouldn't be anywhere near like that because you could map it out. You could see it coming. But this card comes out of nowhere, stops, shuts you down completely, and then like swings the game state around. So those cards
same are- Same with Rippers.
Rippers, yep. Same, Rippers same. Have it too.
Yeah. It's a good point.
And then if you've got a card in the hand, you got to go, oh, do I have to keep adding a damage here or whatever? Or how many wild tokens I have just to like guarantee the kill? And they might just have like, might have sidestep in the hand. You don't know, right?
So I guess my question is like, let's say, okay, let's change the question around. Let's talk about faction cards. So you mentioned earlier that you have like a bunch of, you have four faction objectives cards, right? You already listed them. Yep. In terms of like your gambit and your upgrade, like, are you taking a bunch of faction cards as well? Because like Hatred of the Living, Aura of Shaiish, I think are like really good cards for upgrades. Is it anything else other than that you're looking at? Or
yeah, so I think I have five faction upgrades because they're just amazing cards. Yeah. Gambits I already spoke about, so Dire Ultimatum and Never Falter are my only two. I don't run anything else. I think there's tons of great cards in the game right now that you don't need to worry too much with that. Upgrade wise,
wait, it was Dire Ultimatum and Never Falter. Never Falter, right? You don't like Methodical Assault?
No. I like Center of Attention and stuff. I like pushes. That's sort of what I need. And
that's what I'm hearing. Yeah.
Yeah. I like getting into certain spots. Like reacting to them means like pushing into position. Not just Mortec advancing, but getting your models in the right spot is very important. So upgrade wise, I run five. So Aura of Shaiish is amazing because you can counter charge it into something coming in. So you throw it on Kanan or someone. And then they're like, oh, I'm not going to charge Kanan, minus one dice. They charge in, then you counter charge next to them. And they're like, and you're like, oh, there's minus one dice for you. Have fun with that. There's a lot of really clever ways to use that. Also, you could put it on a Mortec and then Mortec advance them in. And there's this, it's a clever card. Discipline Charge, I like that. It's just a full reroll every time they make a charge. Sometimes that's really useful for Natterite. It's on any Mortec, so you can put it on Kenta if you need to. But you have to charge, so that's probably the weakest one. Empowered Natterite is amazing. It's plus one damage and plus one dice. Like, just, you'd get plus one dice by itself if it was on a card, let alone getting the damage as well. Hatred Living is just a really good card. I don't have many Kanan upgrades, but that's one is just...
Right.
Really,
it's a good one.
It's an extra wound and a reroll, essentially, because, you know, it's minus one damage once is an extra wound. And Unnerving Synchrony, which is the literal best upgrade in the entire Warhammer Underworlds, in my opinion.
Plus one damage, plus one dice, yeah.
No, the Unnerving Synchrony is the free attack.
Oh, is it the... Oh, yep, yeah. Yeah.
That card is actually busted. But, I mean...
Unnerving Synchrony, reaction after an adjacent friendly Mortex action. Other than... Yeah, this fighter makes an attack action. That's pretty crazy, yeah.
Yeah, with range
two. And you can trigger it multiple times.
Yeah, so you can have Kenta sit in the middle of like when they come charging, Kenta sits there. Okay, Harkor makes an attack, does two damage, then Kenta gets to attack and do two damage. That's four damage in one activation. That's two attacks towards Created for War. It's so good. It's just so good. Combined with Mortec Advance as well, you can like charge into position to instantly get it. You don't need to even preset it up. So
yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, I really got to mess around with these Mortecs more. It looks like it's a lot of fun. So I have a couple more questions before we get into some fun.
This is fun, though.
this is a lot of fun. Yeah, no, I'm learning so much, and you get so used to playing a particular style, right? As you mentioned,
yeah.
So now I'm just like, oh, this is such an interesting, different way to play a warband that I played very differently hours ago, right? So what warbands do you want to see across the table? Like, what do you really like? Do you like crushes? I think is like a boogeyman, on paper.
Yeah.
Again, they're like similar to Kanan's in that recently they haven't really been able to hit like that top spot outside of your local meta, right? So what's up with the warbands that you want to see across the table and the ones you don't want to see?
I actually like seeing crushes because all the things that people don't like about them are fine for more, like five wounds. Like killing four wounds for us is hard. Five is not that much different. It's just like procking a Natterite on two damage attacks every now and again. So, and they're slow. So like you can control where they can charge to. When you're playing a control style, when they have limited options, it's really good for you. So I actually kind of like Morgox. That being said, no one in our group plays him right now. So if someone could pick him up so I can bring Kanan's back out, that'd be great. I think stuff like four model aggro is like the good thing for us. So Crimson Court that come in, the Headcrackers, those guys. I love that, seeing that. All those kind of like, you got four wounds, you got four models, you're coming into my territory and your attacks are maybe kind of accurate, but maybe you're on daggers, right? That kind of stuff. It's like, there's enough ambiguity with the dice rolls that I know I'm not going to lose four Mortec in the first round. Whereas like Soul Raid, there's a lot of accuracy there. It's kind of hard, but yeah, I'll take Crimson Court any day of the week. If they're coming in, the ones that sit back in their territory and just sit there and get hunger tokens, they're a pain in the ass because you got to go and fight, got to go and dig them out. But yeah, I think full model aggro. Yeah.
Do you think have you seen the Crimson deck I played at?
I've not seen it, but Craig described it to me. He refused to show me. He said it was top secret, and I'm like, okay, cool. It means he's gonna.
Oh, it's play it on. It's on DB. If you want to take a look,
but I will.
I'm really curious. Yeah, maybe after the show, let me know what you think of like.
Yeah.
Like, what would you do in that scenario? Because, like, I will admit, the one of the scariest moments at Adepticon for me was like we accidentally got mispaired one round. So I sat down in front of Kanan's Reapers, and I'm like, I'm about to die. Like, because my goal is to like wipe those guys, and then Kanan's just gonna. Okay, like do the trade thing, right, is what I was concerned about. And then I got lucky. It was just like, oh, actually, no, you're playing Hrothgorn instead. And I was like, oh, okay, a little bit more, you know.
Yeah.
It's still a big boy, but it was just, I am not going to get walloped from range two, right? And punished for my movement and positioning. So
yeah. There's also so much nuance in deck. Like the decks are one thing, but like how you play it and how the boards are set up and where the objectives are and what cards I draw, for example.
Yeah.
Those things matter so much for the game as well. It's to me, no matchup is completely lost or completely won. But at the end of a game, you should be able to look back and go, okay, I lost that game. Did I lose because I made a mistake? And honestly, more times than anyone would ever like to admit, it usually is. So being critical on yourself and going, no, it was a mistake. Yeah, that's you rolled crits, but like I did these things. These were bad. I should fix
100%.
That.
Yeah, you can't just blame dice. That's one thing that I've learned is that you cannot. It's always something that you've made mistake here and there. And yeah.
Except when I played Craig, because we were all nothing but crits against each other and they're disgusting games. Craig knows exactly what I'm talking about.
or Jacko, right? He just rolled.
Oh, he rolls. His games are frustrating.
One dice attack crit.
Now, me and Craig are very tactical players. And
Craig is very tactical.
Yeah. But our games, like, either way, one of us will roll stupid, like nothing but crits. Yeah. The other person will just like the dice will disappear. Like we have so many fun games when we don't roll dice, but as soon as the dice come out, one of us is having a bad time.
Well, that's the whole idea, right? Is like that's the variable you can't control. So exactly, that'll probably tilt the game in one person's favor.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool in like in a sad way, you know, that happens. But
he's still fun to play, you know.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. He's great. And so I guess my final question for Reapers before we just get into some other questions is, I guess if you had like a cheat sheet or like a note card, an index card, if you will, for a new player who's like, I want to try Kanan's Reapers. This is what they should do or keep in mind to pilot them to reasonable success.
Oh, that's a hard one. I think that. So before I get into the details of the cheat sheet, we'll say Kanan's Reapers they have almost infinite potential in what you can do on the board, right? When you place them down, this on a turn, it's not just about which of your four fighters do you charge. It's who do you charge? Do you Mortec advance? Because you shouldn't always Mortec advance. It's choosing whether to, in what order, to what position. That like the complexity there is quite high. And
give me an example. Give me an example of that.
Okay, so let's say activation one, someone charges into you. They kill a Mortec. All right. So now you've got your first activation. Your choices are, like most people will just get a Mortec. Mortec events two people in and charge, right? But then you of your five remaining fighters, you've activated three of them. So like it's not saving anything for the counter push. So you got to consider, what is their next activation? When are they coming in? Okay, maybe charging a Mortec in with one support is the right choice, or maybe a move, or maybe there's something else. Like, look, you have to consider your options. And as a Kanan's player, you need to be humble enough to know that sometimes your gut instinct is wrong and you need to think bigger and longer, plan many turns ahead. So for example, at the start of a round, there's eight activations. I'm using my chess brain. I'm a chess player. In chess, you plan moves ahead, and those moves aren't like a line, it's a branch. I move this and here are the options. So for a round, I'm sitting there with my branch choices. If I do this, he does this. I'm trying to do all eight activations in my head. When they start playing out, I'm eliminating the ones that don't happen. So having that kind of ability to sit there and look at the board state and make those decisions is how you become a good Kanan's player. So my first thing would be to start playing chess, because it's actually a skill that crosses over with Kanan's. It's weird, but it does. But if you want to play Mortec, play it correctly, I would say you need to learn to be hesitant. You need to be cautious. If you go charging in against the wrong warbands, and most of them are the wrong warbands, you will lose the game. So you need to be careful. If you're a new player, I would say focus on learning how to Mortec advance properly. not just the rule of it's important. Don't get me wrong. It's the basics of it. And then what's effective Mortec advancing. And I would learn, obviously, when to activate Kane is important because you should probably almost never activate him activation one round one. Unless, of course, like someone charged him and he can just hit him back. But, you know, most of the time that's not the case. So I think those two things, Mortec advance and learning how to do that properly, and then when you use Kanan, is the two things that'll set you on the right path. And then from there, it's really up to you to be able to go. First of all, you need, when you play Kanans, no matter what level you are with Kanans, you need to sit back and go, I have so much more I can learn with this. You need to be humble enough to go, I am nowhere near an expert with this warband yet. I personally know that I have so much more to learn with them. And like, people are saying that I'm one of the better players. So like, I'm telling you, there's so much more to learn. Be humble, approach it that way, and you'll find things that are really cool and really fun and will make you win more games more often.
I love that. And I really love that. I think almost, and I think it's really interesting because like a lot of people are like, you know, Soul Raid, they require so many games to play and master. And it sounds like it's the same thing here. Is like,
yeah,
like, you know, because like, I feel like Soul Raid has tinted people's experiences. Because like right now, on like Vassal and stuff, like Mandarga and Alisor are doing so well with Soul Raid. So everybody's like, oh, like, how do I play Soul Raid? And their advice is like, well, we played a shit ton of games, right? Like we figured out when to do the reaction, when to scuttle, when to fish. But I wonder, like, you know, if it's the same thing with Kanans, which it sounds like it is, which is like, well, when do I Mortec advance? When do I rely on Nidorite? When do I use Kanan? When do I charge? When I do this? And like, yes, that can be applied to every warband, but because there's so much going on and there's so much nuance and cool cards and abilities and strategies and different play styles, where it's like, maybe Kanans is one of the best warbands in the game,
well,
but you just need to put in the reps.
It comes down to me to skill ceiling. Right? It's how,
yeah.
So let's say something really basic. Let's say Morgoth's Crushers. Morgoth's Crushers are a great warband, but to me, they have the lowest ceiling of most warbands because of what they do, right?
They're right.
Three move, they can charge, they do, there's skill, but if you invested infinite hours into Morgoth's, you'll get to a point where you can no longer learn more. And you'll learn, you'll hit that point before you hit it with most other warbands.
That's
I think Kanans and Soul Raid and Zarbags and some of those warbands are the warbands that you can invest more and more hours into and you'll never hit that ceiling. So your potential to win games is infinite. Now that's not realistic because obviously, you know, we don't sit there and play the game 24/7, but the more time you invest with Kanans, the better you'll be. When you start playing Kanans, you will be bad. You start below where everyone else starts because it's such a hard warband to figure out and they're so unforgiving with their losses. Whereas if you come in with like Morgoth's and just play out of the box, you're going to beat a Kanans player easily. But it's when you play 50, 100, 200,000 hours into this warband, that's when you start seeing the results. And so many people are like saying, oh, they're not that good. I brought them to a tournament. Yeah, but did you play them for 100 hours? You probably didn't. You probably went online, built a deck, play a couple of practice games, and then brought them to a tournament, didn't get the result. That's, you have to put hours into this warband or you just won't see the results. You will get them if you do.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that kind of covers the Kanans the Reapers topic, right? Like, there's a lot to unpack with this warband. There's a lot to play. Be humble, put in the effort, put in the time, be cautious, and learn how to Mortec advance correctly and know when to, you know, go in with Kanan, right? Summarizing all of that, which is really hard because, you know, we've spent like an hour just talking about how to play the warband. And I felt like we could have kept going, right?
I could talk for 10 hours on this and I would still have more content to talk about. Like,
yeah, I believe that.
Yeah,
that's incredible, and I definitely
a lot of
plan
fun.
On. Yeah, they sound like it, and I want to try them. Like everyone's on like the Soul Raid train right now, and I'm just like I'm gonna Reaper train and see where that goes, and so I'm gonna get on my Bone train and figure it out.
Soul Raid's really good though, so yeah, I don't blame people for getting on that train.
Yeah, that's fair, and it's a really bad matchup for Kanans, but it's probably a good way to learn the matchup as well. So
it is, yeah, it's winnable though. Like as tough as it is, Kanans can win that matchup in the best of three, so don't stress too much.
Yeah. And I'm definitely going to continue this conversation with you, you know, I'll after this podcast as well, right?
Because yeah, like, of course.
I do want to learn, and I think the warband is really cool. So let's jump to another segment that we have on the show. It's called Sleeve It or Leave It.
Okay.
And essentially, it's a random card that either one of us will pick or a patron will pick, and we'll talk about whether we should sleeve the card or we should leave it in the deck box, deck binder, throw it in the trash, whatever you want to call it. I've had some funny answers on here where it's like, I'm gonna fling it across the room and never look at it, right? So
okay, are these real cards or made up cards?
These are real cards.
Okay, all right.
In the game, and it's again, it's sleeve it or leave it. So in this was a card suggested by Bryde.
Yep,
Brydee, and the card is Hall of Hidden Eyes. So you might have to look that up on Underworld's DB. Yeah. Do you want to read it for
everyone? Oh, this card. Yeah. So it's a waypoint card. So you basically put it down. It stays in effect. Rolls of support and full support are successes in attack rolls if the target's in a cover hex. Effect persists until another waypoint's played. Can I answer this first?
Yeah, please. Leave it or leave it. Tell me why.
I actually play this. I think it's really good in the current meta. Everything's sort of like standing in cover hexes, right? So it does two things. Like, you stand on objective and you get your full support successes. And then, you know, it feels good for them. And then you play that and suddenly they're like flipping objectives over to the wrong side. They want to get the defensive bonus. I actually think it's good. I think it's really good for aggro. I think if you're playing against Mike Hannah's Reaper's deck, this would be a card that came out that I'd be like, oh no, this is kind of rough. Because then it hurts my defense. So I think it's really good for aggro. If you're going into their territory, just keep in mind though that it is not just your opponent's cards, it is a fighter's, it's also yours. So if you're standing in cover hexes, it's going to hurt you as much as help you. And there aren't many waypoints in the game, so getting rid of it is difficult. Even if you want to get rid of it yourself, you kind of can't. So I think it's good.
Yeah, the only other waypoint is Penumbral Falls, which is at the end of the action phase, deal one damage to each fighter that's an edge hex. So you're probably leaving that one.
That card might as well say, remove the other waypoint from the game.
Yeah,
that's the only time you play it, is to get rid of that one.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're sleeving it.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. So I have been mixed feelings on this. And I think personally, I'm leaving it. Okay. And I'll tell you why. It's not that I don't disagree with what you're saying. I completely agree. And, you know, even Craig Frye on our Discord Patreon, he mentioned, I think it's a good card for hard aggro, suicide style aggro decks, right?
Yeah.
But then I think I'm more like, so then Nick Ramone, who's he's been on the podcast before, he lives in Italy, his name's Nick. He was like, I think it's pretty bad. You play that card, the opponent just delves his cover hexes, and then you don't have the buff. And I think there's merit into that. It sounds like you want to say something. Go for it. What's your counter to that?
When they're on an objective and they delve it, they're hurting their defensive chances because they're no longer getting full successes. So if that card does nothing but make them have worse defenses, it's still good if you're playing suicide aggro.
That's fair. But I think if you compare the two, like if I'm, let's say, two dodge on Gloom and you hit on two smash and half supports and full supports, it's a better win for you. But if I'm just two dodge and you're just two smash, is that better? Because you're just resetting it, right?
Well, you're comparing it to those two, but the comparison should be two dodge versus two smash or two dodge with Gloom versus two smash. Because that's what that card does, is it changes it from two dodge with Gloom versus two smash to two dodge, two smash. So you're removing that. I see it as like a...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's like a... Yeah, yeah. So I guess in that situation, it is better. You know, it's interesting because like, I think... Like I'm a degenerate and I built a Molog deck just to see what it was like.
Did you have fun with that?
I didn't play it because I just was like, I don't think this is going to make it past the deck building. But I just wanted to see. And, you know, I had this card in there and because I'm just like, hey, I'm thinking like maybe Molog wants the supports and everyone's trying to jump into cover hexes, but I ended up cutting it because like, I don't want like my Stalagsquig to also take the damage from, or like be easier to hit with half supports and full supports.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think, you know what, maybe I'm going to do like the BS answer, which is like, it depends.
I think that's the correct answer, though. Because I ran...
Yeah, is it? Okay.
I ran Illusion to Spoilers for a while. It was like Berserker Rage, all that stuff.
Yeah,
and this
yeah.
card was a godsend. Like, you played this card, and my opponent would... Like, anytime you can... When you're playing hard, like Suicide Aggro, it's math. You're just doing dice against them, right? And anytime... Mm-hmm. Any little inch you can get to make it more reliable to kill them, it's a good... It's better than Sidestep, for example. It also depends on what your 11th card is. Like, what card is this replacing?
Yeah. That's right, yes.
Yeah. If you compare cards, like right now you're saying, oh, it's just is or isn't a good card. But if you're replacing like Center of Attention with it, I'd be like, no, take Center of Attention. It's a better card. But yeah.
Yeah. Best card in the game.
It is the best card in the game. Should be number one play in every deck. It's better than everything.
That's another good question. And there is a flaw to this question of this segment is, you know, is it like, what are you replacing instead of this card? But I think you've convinced me enough to where I'll sleeve it.
For some decks. With a big asterisk. For some deck.
But nonetheless, it's being sleeved, right?
Okay.
Just in preparation. So good. I'm glad we got that answered. So now what I'd like to do is, before COVID and some other things, we used to do a segment on this podcast, and this one, Jonathan was still a co-host, was we would do like Warband Wisdom. And essentially, it was very similar to how we did today's episode, where like an expert of the Warband or someone who's done really well with them will come on and impart their wisdom on the Warband, right? And this really reminded me of one of the those episodes we did. They were like 45 minutes, like bite-sized episodes we would do for fun, just to like push out content, because it was a time in the game where content was struggling because of, you know, COVID. So at the end of that segment, we would have a rapid fire question. So these are random questions I'm answering you. First thought that comes to your head that's appropriate to say on a podcast, say it.
Okay.
Because we do have kids who listen, so we try to keep the swearing to a minimum. So it's like 10 questions, and we're just going to go. So number one, favorite season?
Season 4, the Beast, Dark Chasm, yeah, that one.
Yeah, fair enough. Favorite fighter in the game?
Kenta.
Favorite warband to play, and what does that say about you as a person?
Eyes of the Nine, because, I don't know, I like to do weird things and outplay opponents.
Fair enough. I like that. If you could bring any card from a previous season back to championship format, what would it be?
Oh my God, this question. Blindside.
Blindside. Why?
I like the... it's flexible. You can do it on opponent's charges or your own, and it's just cool to like reposition.
Yeah, fair enough. What do you think about Shadowkeeper?
What's Shadowkeeper? Is that a card? I should know this.
It puts you on guard, and if you roll a crit, your opponent takes the damage.
Oh, that one. Oh, it's busted. Yeah, that card. That's a new one. It's the fighter is on guard card that isn't restricted. Yeah, it's busted. It's really good.
Yeah. Plus, you get the damage, you know, thrown in there for fun.
If the card said this fighter is on guard and had no other text, it's still a restricted card to me. So, like, I don't.
Yeah. Fair enough. Is there a model or a miniature rather? That you loved painting or can't wait to paint? Do you paint?
I paint every warband, yeah. Most favorite to paint was probably the whole Eyes of the Nine warband was one of my favorites, actually, but I'll say Vortimus. Mm. But the Vortimus. Bright blue, oh, that was fun. Yeah, enjoyed that.
Love that. Least favorite fighter in the game, it can be any reason why, but you do have to tell us.
I think it's Molog, because I think the community are so split over him, at least were, and I think it caused a lot of controversy. And I don't think he's that good, and I think that he's ugly as well. So take that, Molog.
There you go. Ugly, lame troll. What warband would you like to see in the future? This can be any mechanic, faction, style, miniature, model count. What do you think?
I have an answer for this because I was talking about it the other night. I'd like to see a ranged warband that couldn't charge. So they had like a setup. You had to move to set up to shoot, and then you can buff them up to like two damage uninspired, three damage inspired. The idea is that like they're much a gun line. You've got to move them into position. It's very slow. Whereas right now in Underworlds, everything's super fast. It's about charging in and quick. This was the opposite to that. Slow. No charge. So you move, set up, shoot. Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like fortify, set up a turret, fire the turret, and then you have to break the turret down or barricade or firing position or whatever. I like that.
Just cool. Something so that like, I think Celestis could have been that if they were daring, but they weren't. Then buffing him and giving him two or three damage on that ranged attack would be a good counter to the lack of movement. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah. I think with Celestis, it's also like a starter set warband.
Yeah, it is.
It's fair. Least favorite warband though. Next question.
The season one Reavers, Garrick's Reavers.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. They're just boring. The theme of them is boring. They're two dimensional with how they play. The painting was boring. Nothing about them excites me.
Fair enough. If you could pick any one warband from a previous season and update it with brand new fighter cards and brand new faction cards, which warband would it be and why?
I've said Eyes of the Nine for like every answer so far. So I'll give you a different one, but that is kind of my the one I would go with. I would actually say probably Thunderix, because they're still fun. They're unique. They're still unique. Like, we don't have any warbands like that. But I think they're a little outdated. They kind of feel very two-dimensional now. Their cards are very boring. So I'd love to see them with a few more interesting cards. I think the fighter cards are fine. They just need a bit more of an interesting faction deck.
Okay, Smash or Fury, or Hammers or Daggers? What do you prefer?
Hammers. I want reliability. I've thrown 8 daggers and got no hits before. I hate daggers. I want my hammers.
Block or dodge?
Block. Reliability.
So you just
reliability. Want the numbers. There you I want go. The numbers. Yeah, I want to roll Fair one right. dice and know I'm going to get that one success. It's fun.
All right, and last question. If you could change one thing about current warband or card, what would it be? Just one thing.
Oh, current warband or card. I would... Oh, that's hard. This is supposed to be rapid fire and quick, but I'm doing a very bad job at this.
No, it's okay.
I would add a wound to the two small guys on Eyes of the Nine to make them kind of okay. Instead of two wounds, make them three wounds. That warband kind of becomes more interesting and more playable.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, hey, not bad. That was good rapid fire. Yeah.
The pressure was on. Some of those I'm like, I got the answer. Other ones I'm like, oh my gosh, how do I do this?
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm always thinking, like, every time I ask, like, what's one thing you would change, I'd say Hack a Basha to 2 damage. Like, now, the fact that
those guys, then you lose the meme. The meme is worth more than they do with 2 damage. Oof, come on.
That's fair. Oh, okay. Well, Benji, first of all, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. I know we were trying to do some schedule foo because, you know, you're like, you're in the future, technically, right? It's already Saturday for you.
Saturday morning, 10:30 a.m. So yeah, it's not my weekend. It's good.
7:30 p.m. on a Friday over here. So future's looking bright. So first of all, thank you for that.
Nice.
I really, really enjoyed learning about Reapers from you, and I hope to continue learning from that and asking you questions. If people also want to reach out to you and find questions and learn more about you, how can they reach you?
That's a good question, actually, because I don't really do social media. Probably Discord's the best bet. I'm on, like, the Vassal Discord. I'm on the Warhammer Underworlds Discord. I'm on the Path of Glory Discord. So just look for Benji in there. I might not type a lot because, you know, time, work, projects, all that sort of thing. But if you send me a DM with questions, I'm going to see it. I'm going to respond when I can. I am moving house this week, so maybe a little bit slower responding, but I'm happy to answer questions, especially about Kanans, but about anything in general. Just hit me up and I'll help you as best I can.
Absolutely. Love that. And I guess, do you have anything that you want to promote or talk about or any shout outs you'd like to give to your community?
I think our community is amazing. We've obviously not done a video for a while, as I mentioned earlier, so we'll be back soon. But like, I want to encourage everyone watching this to check out everything Underworld. So like, podcasts, other YouTube channels. Like, the way we grow this game is by supporting every content creator and
Agreed.
Encouraging and working together and doing things. It's hard to work together because we're around the world, but cross-promoting content and giving the thing for me is constructive criticism, right? And it's not about saying your stuff isn't good. It's about offering ideas. Here's a cool idea that you could do. And don't say they have to do it. Just present ideas to people. And by sharing ideas and building each other up, we make this awesome community even better. And then the entire goal is to bring people that aren't in our community into it, playing Underworld, so that we can grow this game. And the bigger the game, the more longer it will last for, the better it will be, the bigger tournaments we have. And that's just awesome for all of us.
Yeah, very, very much so, a snowball effect. Absolutely. And it starts with, you know, again, content creators working together like we are today to promote the game, cross-pollinate, and spread awareness. And I think now is one of the best times ever because Nether Maze looks sick.
Yeah, now I've just got to fly you down to Sydney so you can play some games on our channel in return, right? That's how it works.
So that's actually, it's funny you mention that because it's always something that I always think, like, man, I wonder if I go one day and if I'm ever in Sydney, you know, because like my fiance and I'm a big Lord of the Rings guy, which is why I like the Swamp Orcs because they kind of give that Lord of the Rings aesthetic. But we might do our honeymoon in New Zealand. Like, we're going to Middle Earth, you know, our honeymoon.
Yeah.
It's close. And so I was thinking, like, you know, maybe we can do like a New Zealand and Australia, you know, maybe tag team.
It's probably worth the flight. It's like a 3-hour flight from New Zealand to Sydney. It's not that bad.
But yeah, it's not bad at all.
Honestly, Open Invitation. Sydney's a lovely city. It's a great holiday destination. Yeah. And if you're, hell, if anyone else is in the area and you want to hang out with us, play some Underworlds on your holiday, hit us up because we're friendly and, you know, might be able to get the camera gear out, have some special guests. But we are obviously in the middle of nowhere in the world, so it is hard to do this sometimes, I think. But yeah.
Well, I'm very happy. I'm happy that you extend the invitation not only to me but anyone else in the community who's traveling to Sydney. And if you haven't checked out Tabletop Sydney on YouTube, I would highly recommend it. It is probably the most high production, clean Underworlds battle reports you will see on the interwebs, and really good bunch of guys, all with lots of personality. There's something on that channel for everyone. And I can't recommend it enough. So, yeah. Well, any final thoughts before we close this out?
I think it's just I'll encourage everyone: be positive, support each other, and let's all get better at Underworlds together. You know, let's raise everyone's skill so that we can all have more interesting games and events.
Absolutely. And I guess that'll do it for the episode. So once again, thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to join our current patrons, you can do so at patreon.com/pathtoglory. You can find all of our blog content on pathtoglorypodcast.com, where you can check out the new Nethermaze stuff that we will be reviewing shortly. And if you have any feedback, questions, or comments, let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Discord at Path to Glory Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And as always, thanks for listening, and we wish you the best of luck on your path to glory.